Hello, this is Coach Jim Harbaugh with my esteemed colleague and co-host JT Rogan. And we're excited to announce our new podcast, Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, that's coming to Podcast One.
Each week, we'll be talking to different members of the Harbaugh family, along with athletes, celebrities, and unique guests.
On different episodes, we'll have my dad, Jack, my brother, John, my sister, Joni, my wife, Sarah, and even my kids from time to time. We'll have great guests each week, and we'll attack each podcast with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Sounds pretty good to me. So join us each Tuesday on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast here on Podcast One. Also, make sure to subscribe on PodcastOne.com, on the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts. And Coach, who's got it better than us?
I know the answer to that, JT. Nobody.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on, man. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Drewski?
We do indeed, my friend.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm just good. I say good day, sir.
Good day, man. What are you working on?
Working on a documentary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're going to documentary about opiates in this country. And no one gets the story the way I do because I lived it, baby.
You lived it?
I lived it.
When strung it, out on the streets,
right,
turning tricks.
With needle hanging out of my arm. Well, I only saw high-end rich ladies.
You
rich
had more
women
than that needle hanging out.
I only saw rich, good-looking women as
young,
I was prostituting.
Young, nubile.
You good looking women. Mm-hmm. All I saw.
Widows.
Oh, no, wait. Men. Only men. Mm-hmm. Only men.
Yeah.
But I talked to Garagos about this, and he agreed with me. Is that pod's not up now, right? That's available, though, to people?
That's available.
Me and Garagos, yeah. And at drdrew.com, go over there and you can check it out. And we were talking about how the laws and the way the doctors were being accused of criminal action for inadequate treatment of pain created this fear that doctors had about not giving people enough meds, and if somebody needed medication, you just send them to the pain specialist. Mm-hmm. And the pain specialist developed a professional sort of notion that pain is whatever the patient says it is.
Somebody tweeted me something the other day that basically said there's really no such thing as lower back pain. That's just something that's created when your body like wants a break or doesn't want to, whatever, or something.
There's all this theory that it's blood supply. And I will tell you, most of the people that take painkillers for low back pain are in chronic withdrawal. That's why they're having back pain.
Right.
They're having hyperalgesia, which means every discomfort is amplified and the misery index of it goes up. And they're often just addicted, just responding to that. And so the low back pain is reinforced for all those reasons.
You know, everything for me in my life is anecdotal, and that's more than enough. Right. That's the way I roll.
Yeah. The polar bear theory, we used to call it.
No. I mean, yeah.
When it
but
comes
no,
to humans.
No, not the polar bear theory. Just me, just whatever I see.
Okay.
Whatever I see or experience, I just extrapolate it, and that's and my answer times everyone.
Okay.
And I told you I used to have a lot of back and neck pain when I did jobs that I did not want to do. I would wake up in the morning and go, I don't want to go to work. I dread going to work. And I'd go to bed Sunday night dreading Monday morning, and magically I'd wake up Monday morning with a head and a neck so stiff I couldn't turn my neck.
Yeah.
And I started to... At the time, I thought, well, you're working with your hands, you're on your feet, or you used to play football or something, you maybe slept wrong or something like that. At some point, I got into show business, and it never happened again.
Yeah,
I literally started doing what I wanted to do for a living, and I never experienced it again.
Is it possible?
I'm no. Just, okay. Oh, go ahead. Shit on your own point and my point. Go ahead. Shit on both of them.
Well, I'm trying to anticipate.
Gonna be both
no, I'm actually trying to anticipate.
Shit on both. Go ahead.
Let me just say, although I have a history of doing so, I'm anticipating other people shitting on our points. So the question remains, did you – which I think the answer is no, but did you stop working with your hands so much or in jobs where you'd be in positions where you could generate back pain after you got into show business?
Well, I've always done work.
Right.
I've always built. I've always worked on house. I've always worked on cars. You know
right.
that. So
that's
you know
right.
the answer is no.
Okay. So anybody who would say, oh, it's because you got on the show, would say, no, you were continuing to do the similar kind of work. But and we really don't know what that is. The truth is,
I know what it is. You don't want to go to work, and your head's going to control your body and say you're not going to go to work.
Well,
it can't control your biceps. It can control your spinal column.
Well, it seems so. Also, when you are depressed, you don't sleep normally, and so you get muscle aches from that. And you get sort of fibromyalgia-like things. So there's all kinds of reasons. When you're depressed, pain is amplified. So there's lots of reasons. You know, to give a specific physiology locally in the back, I'm not sure.
I am sure because I know everything.
So what is it?
I just told you.
Now, what's the physiology in the back? That's what I'm saying.
It's not a physiology. It's basically your back is hooked up to your brain, and your back will do the bidding of your brain. And if your brain would like to send a message to say, I need more Vicodin, or I don't want to go to my horrible construction job this morning and get yelled at by my foreman, then your brain will override, and it will tell your back not to lie. It'll create pain. That is invisible pain. There wasn't anything physiologically wrong with me, especially from one day to the next. I was fine on a Saturday.
Right.
All of a sudden, Monday morning, I can barely sit up on my futon. Well, that's your brain going, hey, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Or I'd like some more of this.
Right.
I didn't have Vicodin. I didn't have access to Vicodin. I didn't have a doctor. I didn't have prescriptions. I didn't have insurance. I didn't have anything. But if my brain... If I was further along and my brain wanted some Vicodin, then I guess it would have asked for some Vicodin.
Well, if you – and this was started this whole conversation. Had you been around like with that in the late 90s, early 2000s, then they would have been like pushing it on you. Like, here, that's what you do for this. It's much you need.
Well, but not me because I wouldn't have had a doctor, seen a doctor,
availed myself of a doctor.
But
right.
Other people, yeah.
Which is sad, and that's how it gets going. That's how it got going. And
well, it had to. And it's something we'd always talked about, and we'd always talked about the fact that the drug manufacturers were sort of complicit in this.
Oh, yeah, they were duplicitous, but not causing it. It was my profession causing it.
No, I get it, but you had a slightly more naive understanding of this 20 years ago or more, where... When I kept saying, well, this is good for the drug companies then, and you go, they don't like it. You know, they don't like it. And I said, why not? 100 pills a day versus one pill a day. That's got to be good for business. And you're like, they wish it would go away or they don't like it. And I said, look.
It's both.
If you're selling toilet paper and they're buying rolls and rolls of toilet paper to TP the dean's house, you think Charmin is pissed? Like, I just feel like Charmin's happy that stuff's flying off the shelves.
They are, but eventually Charmin's going to bear part of the responsibility, and that's what they don't like.
But the amount of units of their product moved.
You're right. I'm
not disagreeing. It had to be at least tenfold
over
what a normal prescription would be.
Oh, I think it's more than
when
that.
When I say at least, it could be 50.
And then they kept developing more addictive stuff in the name of creating better medicine for cancer patients. And oh boy.
Everyone needs to know that there is no real answer other than whatever work you need to do to remedy whatever it is that's going on. Like, there just is no pill that fixes fill in the blank. It works temporarily, and you know, if you had your wisdom teeth pulled or something, and it'd help you get through that night and maybe the night after or whatever that is. But beyond that, there's nothing. There's nothing for sleep. There's nothing for happiness. There's nothing for health. There's nothing for back pain. There's just really nothing, really. I mean, unless you have a tumor or something, but there's really nothing
right,
for today. Here, aha! Aha!
Dig.
Medicine, in the absence of a chronic disease, disease. Hold on, quiet.
No, just say a disease. Don't say chronic.
Well, why can't I say chronic?
Because then these pills still don't work.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean, like, if you're diabetic, you need to measure your insulin and you need to take care of yourself. And it's just an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there's things in life that just are you may have them and they may be an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
Dig. Medicine cannot be used or should not be used for sort of daily life.
No, right.
And people,
it's not meant to make life better. It's meant to help fight disease back when the risk is worth the benefit.
If you don't have a disease,
you shouldn't be taking a pill.
Then everything should be.
And even then, you should think really hard about it.
Right. So now, what do we have to combat that? Well, we have the aforementioned long walks and classical music and vigorous exercise and
meditation,
and going to the gym and swimming laps and good friends and good laughs and good times,
nutrition,
and accomplishment and overcoming obstacles.
Wait
and
a minute,
goals.
Grandma. And you back some old-fashioned idea about what makes life worthwhile, Grandpa Moses?
Yes, that's it. That's the daily part of life. And then,
do you mean what they wrote in some of those books 3,000 years ago has some relevance today? Is that what you mean?
That's all there is for life.
You mean that those Greek philosophers were onto something?
And then there is, you got hit by a car.
Right.
You had to have your wisdom teeth removed, or you have shingles or something like that. And then we can go ahead and focus on that for a little period of time, and then we'll go right back to
dig.
This.
We've gotten so good at treating disease, and we've hidden it so far behind a curtain that no one ever sees it, that we're getting confused. Mm-hmm. About what's disease and what's not, and what medicine should be used for.
Oh, we've been doing that for a long time.
I agree with you. I agree.
So,
and then death and dying is something, well, that's never going to happen to me. We've almost fetishized living.
Ooh.
Ooh. Like that?
Powerful, Drew.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Because we should be celebrating death as part of life. Instead, we've clung only to living as the only possible viable way to go.
Gary?
Yes, sir.
I can look up something. I think, Drew, it's just sort of on the topic that Drew and I are talking about. Just some female law professor penned an article about this sort of bourgeoisie form of life or style of life that we're getting away from, which is a better, you know.
What are we getting into?
Well, she basically said, hey, that stuff that we spent the last 40 years looking down our noses at, like, oh, getting married and then having kids, or saving money for a rainy day, or having a sense of community and knowing your neighbors and having some civic responsibility. Squaresville, daddy-o. That doesn't sound like fun to me. That doesn't sound like anyone I want to hang out with. And by the way, what's wrong with that person?
Yeah, yeah.
Something's wrong with them. Now we've just labeled them racist or homophobe or something, that just want to raise their kids.
Caving to the man.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Takes the village. Come on.
Sort of explain that this is just a better way of life. It's a more effective way of life. Postponing gratification. Again, having kids after you get married.
What?
Getting married after you've got your degree or begun your career or whatever.
Whatever it is.
She was torn apart by her colleagues, of course, for suggesting. I like the notion that we're living in a time, Dr. Drew, where if you even suggest the obvious, we got a big issue with you.
Yeah.
Forget about going out on a limb.
Yeah.
Merely talking about the stuff we've always known as effective is now. And ironically, the lives, all the people who tore her apart, they live that their life that way. Mm. They have kids.
Oh, yeah,
They waited till they were older before they got their education.
I've got a bunch of things to watch.
All right. Well, hold on. Gary will find that. I'll tell you guys about True Car. Shopping for a car, make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. People configure cars online only to find out they're not available. Do not let that happen to you. Go to True Car. Get real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual True Car certified dealer. Over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. True Car users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, you go new or you go used, but you go True Car. You do what our own Chris Max Pata did over here with his Prius, man.
So easy.
Got that car over True Car, saved himself a boatload of money. Got a car that was a little used, but with 200 miles on it. I mean, that's practically new. He went to True Car. So when ready to buy, visit TrueCar.com. See what other people are paying and enjoy a more confident buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, Drewski, you got something?
I've got enough to fill the rest of the week, so let's take a couple calls. Let's see
what all right, let's start at the top. Sean, 33, Fresno. Sean?
Hey, how's it going? Love you guys. I just had a question a little bit more for Drew here, but at one point I remember, Drew, you putting something out or saying something. I can't remember, but about how some of the more popular drugs, that cocaine is pretty much one of the worst for you physically or mentally or something like that. I don't remember. I just wanted more info on that.
Well, I'm sure I didn't say anything like that, but let me tell you what I probably did say, which is that binge cocaine – when we talk about cocaine, we're really talking about crack. So binge crack use is very difficult to treat because people do it in binges and they have the illusion of being able to control it in between their binges. And the binges start to get closer and closer together. The consequences mount over time. And it's just as devastating as any other daily addiction. But again, it's hard to convince people they need to do a daily process like recovery when they have this illusion that they can control it. It is also from a standpoint of true addiction, not the – I don't know how to describe this. In terms of the overriding of the normal physiology of the reward system, cocaine is king. What I mean is that no matter how poorly you feel on the drug, no matter how shitty it makes you feel and how much worse you feel with each hit, once you're in, you keep going. The so-called do it again part of the brain, or the, you know, do it or else part, it has the most powerful effect on that of any other drug. It's not as devastating.
Crack cocaine.
Crack.
Not powdered.
What about the more common, just not crack, but...
Well, you got to use a lot of it.
Would dabble in...
Yeah, you can get
regular cocaine. I would say about once a week, maybe.
Yeah, you can get into trouble with it, and people that are using powder cocaine up, you know, intranasally can certainly, you know, lose their entire nose and other things.
How much is coke a gram these days, Sean?
A gram? I would say about $50, roughly. It just depends on where you go and how good it is.
I gotta get in a coke, man. I really do. When I was making $8 an hour, it was a big deal. And it was like $110, $120 a gram. Yeah. And I mean, people's entire paycheck would go to get 2 grams of cocaine. Yeah. And it wouldn't last a weekend. It'd be an entire week of like digging ditches and cleaning carpets. It was brutal. Now, I'm making hundreds of dollars an hour. I could easily afford a gram or so. You know?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I feel
enjoy.
Like I am.
With your medicine at night.
Gary says 50's on the high side.
Jesus.
He said
Gary,
he'd sell me.
Why do you know that?
He'd sell me an 8-ball for $35.
Really? 8-ball. So anyway.
And it's like the marijuana. It got better. And
oh, like, you're killing me, Sean.
The demand is a little higher. The demand is a little higher, now, especially with the whole Mexican thing. They know what they're doing.
All right, so Sean, let me finish the thing. Is that the intranasal users usually combine it with alcohol and pot? It's usually pot, alcohol, and cocaine, and alcohol usually is the one that's causing you the most trouble. But pot ends up being the one people have most difficulty leaving behind when it's that combination. And there's also something, you know, when you drink with cocaine, you produce something called cocaethylene, which is a combined compound, theoretically, of the two, which is more cardiotoxic. So it's actually a more dangerous way to use cocaine, though I'm certainly not advocating crack as a safer alternative. It's way worse, of course. It's all relative. You know, in terms of the drugs that cause the most death and destruction, it's the opiate-benzo combination. In terms of the drug that's most difficult to stop, it's the opiates. So there you go.
Yeah, and it's not like we haven't – it's such a weird media that we have out there, which is there's been quite a few notable examples of people being killed as of recently with these drugs and the combination of these drugs. And it's kind of anything but a focus on that in any sort of legitimate, realistic way, you know. You have Tiger Woods slumped over his car wheel, and he's proclaiming it was not booze. It was definitely not booze. And the news kind of going, everyone relax. It wasn't booze. Right. I mean, he should wish it was booze.
Oh, absolutely. And I said immediately, that's benzo opiate. That's a combo.
I'm simply saying, everybody,
Be lucky he's not dead. That's the other thing.
How many notable, and there's got to be some ratio. Basically, celebrities are a sort of, they're kind of a Oh, okay. We'll put it to you this way. If one celebrity dies with the benzo thing, 10,000 people you've never heard of will die.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If two celebrities die in a year, then 40,000 die or 20,000 die. Right. There's something out there, and there's always something out there.
It's also a leading edge, too. It's a harbinger. In other words, when Heath Ledger died, I said, here it comes. Here it comes, everybody.
Well,
it's going to be opiate benzo death like crazy. Now it's Chris Cornell. Here it comes. You're going to hear more about the benzos.
I'd like you to dig.
Dig.
In the 1940s or 50s or whatever, you could probably do the same with automobile fatalities. Mm. Like every notable that you've heard of, Princess Grace or whomever, who died in an automobile, you could go, and there was 5,000 Americans who died for every one of those. Now, we've kind of gotten rid of that, so to speak, but the celebrities are just a small version of like kind of what's going on.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
stuff wasn't going no, on 20 that, years ago.
That's absolutely right. I think that's absolutely true. It's almost like a pulse of the nation kind of thing. It's like
right.
but it's also a bellwether. It's what's coming too for the average person.
Right.
Yeah.
They're on the vanguard, whether it be fashion or ODing and dying.
There you go.
But again, as far as the media goes, it's not a big. It's not much around it. Weird. It's weird. That's a weird wiring that the media has.
In terms of understanding it as a bellwether or vanguard?
In terms of reporting it, just in some sort of way that made sense.
Well, I think what happens is, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just guessing, that the family, because it's early, there's no acceptance of it as something that you shouldn't be ashamed of or that it's a commonplace thing. So immediately the family, the publicist starts covering, like, no, that didn't happen. The press being ignorant by that, and then that's the end of it. Then you get some bullshit story.
The press is not supposed to be ignorant, and they're also, look.
When it comes to medical reporting, it's phenomenal.
I know, but they pick and choose. You know what I mean? If somebody says, hey, listen, Trump, Russia, collusion, nothing to see here. Keep moving. They go, we're not buying that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they start digging in because that's something that they're interested in. Mm. When you say Chris Cornell died because a oak tree fell on him, they go, no, moving on.
Right.
So it's like, that's why I don't buy it. I wish they took the same ferocity and approached it to everything.
Yeah.
I want to get to the truth for everything.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. They seem to be super lazy about this one.
Well, it gets it bothers me because what really happens is where they have energy, they're going to make a narrative that suits a story that they want to tell.
True.
As opposed to where they should be creating, you know, an understanding everywhere, they use ferocity to lay out a narrative that suits them.
All right. Do you have that op-ed thing, Gary?
Yeah, I do. Do you want me just to read the parts that you're going to like the most, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, I do.
No, read the parts he won't like the most.
Well, no, it's just he's referenced a few sections here.
I get it.
Who wrote it?
It is Amy Wax and Larry Alexander.
Oh. Are they the people that did the studies on the success in the law school kids? Like what kind of what sets people up for success? I bet you they are.
I would bet they are based on reading this.
He's a Jewish guy. She's Chinese. Is that couple?
I have no idea. But
I say it only because that's how I remember them.
I just love the way that successful people can explain to other people what it takes to be successful and what sort of the rules are.
Well, they
be successful, and
what
then
they
you just
saw
get called
was,
a heretic.
Well, what they saw was in their law, they're both law school professors, and they saw in their class that certain populations were overrepresented: Nigerians, Mormons, Jewish, and Chinese. And so they went in and studied what was going on in those populations that would predispose to it. And it's everything you talk about.
Yeah.
Delayed gratification. The only thing was that sort of a sense of specialness, special purpose. Yeah,
well,
they had special purpose. They were willing to delay gratification because they were doing it for the country or for the people or for whatever.
I just feel like I'm Bill Belichick over here going, look, you want to win games? You got to live in the weight room, and then we got to go outside and we got to drill, drill, drill. And somebody's raising their hand going, I know a guy who's a natural phenom. Never worked out once, right. All-American. And I'll go, okay, but that's not us.
Yeah.
That's not us. We need to get in drill. We need calisthenics. We need to live in the weight room. I know one guy had 21-inch biceps. The guy never lifted anything but a beer can. Okay. Why are you telling me this, by the way? I'm saying you're wrong. Well, no, I'm saying we need to go in the weight room. Not everybody needs to go to the weight. Yeah, I'm saying in general, the team is more successful if people work out and we practice hard and we put in the long hours.
Well, hey, but you lost your first game.
Yeah, you lost that game. Yeah, but that was a bad hold on a freakish field goal. We should have won that. Nah, but you did lose that one. Like, and now you're arguing about something where I don't know how. How can you argue against workout, work, you know, practice, drill, success on Sunday? Why are we even arguing about this? Because I know a team that didn't work very hard and they still won the championship. It's like, so should we go down that road then? Should we all just pull up a beanbag and hope we hoist a Lombardi over our head? Well, no, I'm just saying there's one team. And then that same person goes, I agree with you that working out and practice and fundamentals are paramount to success on the field. I'm simply saying there are many teams that don't work out that have success, and you need to focus on that. It's like, why? You need to acknowledge that. Why would I want to acknowledge that? I'm trying to get my team into the weight room. What is that, Drew? Who are these people, and what's going on with that
just
weird message?
Just beware whenever ideology wins out over pragmatism or human well-being. That's when you need to watch out.
Everyone knows what the truth is because you're human and it's right there in front of you. Of course.
Here's the truth. Blinds galore.
Ew.
You want to know these guys. Over 2 million windows and counting. These experts will guide you every step of the way. We have them at our home, and oh my God, this summer I've been so delighted with them because it keeps the hot out and the cool in. These shades are excellent. They give you free samples. There's free shipping on top of the free expertise. And I'm telling you, because they take such care in terms of you getting the exact 100% custom window treatment you wanted to your exact measurements down to every little detail, you're happy when you get your blinds. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the designer blinds you want and shades without the designer price tag. So you can go to blindsgalore.com. You let them know that I'm and Dr. Drew sent you. And you can find out exactly how to do the process of getting that expert guidance every step of the way. Free samples. You pick the exact right materials for your particular custom window. They do that better than anyone else. That's all they do. Check out blindsgalore.com. And again, blindsgalore.com.
All right, Drewski. We'll get into that op-ed piece, I think, tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I got all kinds of stuff. Our next show. Drew's got all kinds of stuff. And we got, there's calls to get into as well. All right. Mean Chicago, September 23rd, Park West, one man show. Come on out and see that. I think I'm doing two shows. And then
this Saturday.
This Saturday. There you go. Come on out this Saturday. And then Minneapolis on the 13th of October and then the 14th, Nashville. And just go to adamcarolla.com for everything. We got live podcasts, live one man shows. You can go to Chassis. And check out all our movie offerings and all that kind of stuff and check it out. Yes, sir.
Hey, go to doctor.com. I'm going to set up a page. My research page isn't what I'd like to be. So I was thinking I would put a bunch of videos up there that answer kind of the common questions and things like how to get referrals and deal with your healthcare system and common problems. So email us. Go to doctor.com/contact and tell me what you'd like me to address in those videos. Check it out.
Good. So until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.